Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save big money at
Menards. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is the Believe in Pro Wrestling podcast. Here's Rick Uccino and SP3 on the Believe Podcast Network.
What is going on, everyone? Good Friday morning to you. Rick Uccino, SP3, here on a very special Friday edition of the Believe in Pro Wrestling podcast, because we have a very special guest. We are not alone. We're joined by former WWE superstar. You may know him as Tucker, but now he's going by Levi Cooper, and he is our now Believe Podcast Network colleague. Got a brand new podcast is going to be coming out here on the Believe in Pro, the Believe Podcast Network. Believe in Pro Wrestling is our show of that. Levi, how's it going? Good, sir.
Doing very good, man. Thank you guys for having me. I'm doing very well.
You look good. You look healthy. You look well relaxed, and you're just looking good, man. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, appreciate that. You know, things have been good. I obviously took some time off, and my son was born. I had a daughter before that. She's almost four, but my son's now 5 months old. So, you know, I've just been doing that, and it's been really awesome, man. It's been good.
I was going to say, like, because Sid and I both have young kids, that has to be, but they're really close in age. So having a four-year-old and a one-year-old, that has to be a pretty interesting dynamic, or a five-month-old, excuse me, and a four-year-old.
Yeah, man. And I'm Mr. Dad right now. You know, that's my 9-to-5. My wife is a educator. And so after Christmas break, she went back to work. So, you know, yeah, I've had my daughter goes to preschool from 9:30 to 12, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. So, you know, I got a little bit of one-on-one time there. But otherwise, yeah, I got both of the Rugrats all the time. And, you know, it's definitely a change of pace from wrestling. But as you know, I love it. I wouldn't change it for the world, honestly, man. You know, there's only one thing you can't get back in the world, in my opinion, you can't make back, and that's time. So and especially being on the road as much as I was, like, I very much appreciate it. Not that it isn't difficult, but I'm very appreciative.
Yes. I mean, Sid and I both work multiple jobs, and it's really hard, like, balancing all of that time to make time for my 9-to-5, which is actually a 6-to-2, and then making time, you know, for this and putting the effort into this to make it as best as possible. And then also being, you know, daddy and, you know, a husband and everything like that. There's just not enough hours in the day. So I'm actually kind of jealous of the fact that you have that time, you know, to spend with your kids. Cause I feel like I've missed most of my daughter's life already at 3 years old.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I missed a lot of my daughter's, you know, early childhood, right? Like, my daughter was, I think, 5 months old when we got called up, you know, and then I was on the road for over 2 years straight. I know exactly what that's like. And the calculation for me staying home right now, honestly, is as much financial too as it is about time, right? I mean, under 4 year old and a 5 month old, like, it's probably $4,000 a month or at minimum for childcare. So, you know, that's right. I could probably make that money if I really wanted to grind hard, you know, no problem. But like, then I would never see my kids. So I'm like, you know what? Nope. I'll just like Nope, it's worth it. It's just worth it to me, you know? Yeah, and I enjoy, and I get to enjoy wrestling here and there on the weekends and get to, you know, do what I love and make a little bit of money doing it. And that's just perfect and dandy for me right now.
And we're going to dive into all that. We'll dive into the new podcast as well. First, we got to thank our friends over at Bet Online, which this episode would not be possible without them. It is that time of year. College basketball takes center stage with the tournament. It is finally upon us. If you're looking to wager this year, BetOnline is your number one spot for all of your updated odds and info, along with the great contests, including the bracket contest, where you have a chance to take home the top prize. Head on over to the website, use your mobile device, sign up today, receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code BELIEVE to get started. That is BLEAV. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino games. BetOnline is where the game starts. And, you know, Levi, you talk about being a stay-at-home dad as well, doing a little bit of wrestling on the weekend as well. Kind of update the people who haven't seen you in quite some time when you're talking about doing the wrestling thing. Where have you been doing? What's been going on with you?
Yeah, so I've just been, I've been sticking around the Pacific Northwest. So I live in Vancouver, Washington, just across the border from Portland, Oregon. And so I've been wrestling for Defy in Seattle and had wrestled for Prestige in Portland. I'm going to go out to Spokane, Washington, which is about 5 hours away from me for Support Pro Wrestling. I got a couple dates with them, one in April and one in August. And, you know, yeah, just kind of, I mean, the main thing I wanted to do when I came back to wrestling was just to do it because I love it, you know, and do it because I have a certain presence, like my own kind of being present inside of the ring that I just kind of can't get anywhere else in my life. You know, and so that's sort of been kind of the ethos of why I wanted to come back and kind of what I was looking for as sort of the main thing for me in wrestling, because I felt like I lost that a little bit, you know, just with the way things were it is what it is, right? We go through those kind of things in life and we have to learn those lessons and kind of figure out, you know, what your proverbial why is for doing things. You know, and I've been able to do that and feel very good about it.
Yeah, I've been seeing a couple of your shows on the independents, especially you and at Prestige Wrestling, and you're in awesome shape. I just want to let you know that. Just seeing you, and what do you say that you've done differently, like coming back into the professional wrestling world to kind of get you in this top notch shape?
Yeah, so I've been doing a lot of DDPY and just traditional yoga as well. Those have been kind of just a big pivot in my life. I spent, you know, the better part of 30 years, or not 30 years, but I guess you could say from the time I was born until after my 30th birthday, anytime that I was training, it was kind of in pursuit of being bigger, faster, and stronger, sort of regardless of what the long-term ramifications of that were on my body, right? Just like, hey, I'm an athlete. I want to do this. Like, I have a full-time schedule. So my job is to, you know, be as big, fast, and strong as I possibly can. And maybe if there's going to be a little bit of long-term injury there, like I'll work around that as opposed to maybe addressing it right then and there. So I started having some issues with my hip and just kind of realized that I had certain hip mobility that was bad. And I actually, yeah, everybody's body's a little bit different, right? And so I think my family in general kind of have not great hip mobility and sort of a bit of a pelvic tilt. And so I started realizing and researching and doing much work and realized, like, I'm very quad dominant. I'm too strong. So anyways, long story short, I stopped lifting weights for a year and a half probably and just did, you know, DDPY was the main thing. And then also, you know, some kind of slower yoga, because I knew I needed to really improve my mobility. And so along with that came kind of some natural weight loss. I also did the Whole 30 a couple times, which is an elimination diet that kind of meant to reset your hormones and your kind of brain and stomach relationship. And so, you know, that was something that was pretty helpful for me as well, just to kind of, you learn some things about like your emotional relationship with food in that regard as well. And so, you know, I kind of realized like growing up, the only thing we ever talked about food was like its taste, you know, and a lot of the conversation in America is framed around that. as opposed to sort of like it's the fuel for your body to do the things that you want to do in life. And so, you know, to kind of start to look at it in that regard has also been pretty helpful and has helped me make a shift.
And I was going to say that added mobility, I mean, yeah, that's going to help you in the ring as well, but it's going to help you out at home. I mean, you got two young kids who are running around, and that's kind of what I'm focusing on right now as well. Cause you know, I'm a guy who likes to cook, and you know, I like to make healthier foods because who the hell knows what's out there. And I've had weight problems my entire life. So I like to know what is going into my body. And when we started having kids and I started working multiple jobs, I really kind of lost track of the whole cooking thing because it became, oh, well, what's easiest? What's quicker? Let's just pick up Skyline chili. Let's just make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And then all of a sudden I go from 215 to 250 over the course of 3 years. So I'm really trying to get back into that and get back into that healthy lifestyle as well.
Yeah, you gotta, you know, it takes time, right? And it's like anything in life, like you have to, I mean, there's a lot of pulls on our time, obviously, like you're talking about, just kind of in the modern American lifestyle. So where you prioritize that time is very important, right? In terms of kind of what you're going to get out of any particular thing. And so, yeah, it's like if we don't prioritize kind of food and eating healthy, then the environment around us is going to dictate that we probably won't eat healthy just because of kind of the convenience of, right, what's easy and what's convenient is typically not what's healthy or what's good for us. So those kind of things just dictate a lot.
Yeah, I also work at a radio station 5 days a week, and we get like free fried chicken that's dropped off every Thursday, like, and donuts on Tuesday. Like, it is impossible to stay fit in a radio station when you're sitting on your butt all day reading newscasts, and then you get free crap delivered to you, literally. But you know, again, we're kind of diving into these things because these are some of the things that you're going to be, you know, kind of focusing on here a little bit on your podcast, which is going to be called Wrestling Is Life. It's going to be coming out here on a to be determined date. As of right now, you're still in the preliminary stages, but kind of run us down what you're going to be talking about on Wrestling Is Life.
Yeah, so I'm going to shoot for sometime in April will probably be when the first episode drops. The NCAA wrestling tournament is coming up in a couple of weeks. The opening weekend of NCAA basketball has always been the weekend that the NCAA wrestling tournament is, which is, you know, obviously very near and dear to my heart. Something I competed in three times, and kind of what led me down the path of professional wrestling was the success that I was able to find at that tournament to some degree. So, you know, kind of be discussing all things amateur wrestling, current events, if you will, you know, not spending a long time on that, maybe 5 to 15 minutes. You know, and then kind of discussing, like you said, some of the things that I've talked about here early on. I also, you know, graduated from college with an accounting degree. And so I feel like I've learned some decent business lessons and, you know, have invested quite a bit. Not that I'm going to be passing on financial advice to anyone, you know, but kind of what I think are maybe some good strategies or even just where to go to start to look if you wanted to learn about these particular things. And just kind of hope to, you know, educate people, like I said, around business, around mental health, physical well-being, and just kind of pass along what I feel like are some of the things that amateur wrestling taught me in my life and has helped me, you know, be what I feel like is fairly successful and have, you know, a pretty positive perspective, you know, on life and on challenges, right? So that's sort of where I'm coming from. I mean, really, my main goal is to just put positivity out into the world. That's what I'm looking to do. That's what I want to do. That's kind of my goal moving forward out of, in general, is sort of like the projects that I work on or the things that I'm doing. You know, the underlying thing needs to be that I feel like I'm putting positivity out into the world, or the entity is putting positivity out into the world, or else I'm not going to do it. And so, you know, that's kind of going to be the underlying ethos, if you will, of the show.
I know for those that, you know, primarily know you from your professional wrestling career, they don't know too much about your amateur wrestling side. Like you, like you just said, you're very successful in the amateur wrestling world. You placed eighth in 2011 in the NCAA wrestling championship. You earned All-American status. How was that transition from going from amateur wrestling to professional wrestling? And what did you see was like the biggest hurdle you had to overcome making that transition?
Yeah, there's definitely quite different for things that are, you know, named the same thing. Yeah, and, you know, amateur wrestling, I think, So I think the biggest difference, kind of the underlying thing, is that in amateur wrestling, when I was at my very best, I was super kind of narrow-minded, tunnel vision, if you will. I'm talking about like in a match, like in the moment, is like I'm paying attention to almost no external factors. You know, maybe if there's a break in action, I'm looking to my coach for, you know, 3 to 5 seconds worth of information if he's seen something that I'm not seeing. But otherwise, it's like, before I'm ready for a match, I'm thinking about like the 2 or 3 positions that I think are going to be the ones that I can use to win in this match, right? And that when I'm at my best, I wasn't always in that mental space, but like I've realized, hey, that's okay. I'm just like, I'm trying to get to my underhook and then whatever, boom. And that's like going through my head over and over as I'm wrestling and trying to get to my spots and then just reacting to what's happening in front of me. And in pro wrestling, when I'm at my best, I'm taking in all information from external factors, right? And then reacting according to those, you know, and that includes what my opponent's doing. But obviously you guys know, like we're on the same page. So like, if we're not, like, we're going to hopefully not do something without the other person being ready for it, essentially, right? And so there's room for you to stop and make eye contact with someone and have a bit of an emotional moment, right? Or to just look around and take in what's happening around you and listen and all of those kind of things that are what make a professional wrestling performance, you know, go from good to great, right? Is that like, you can't discount the connection that you could potentially make with somebody that, you know, is an experience that they might remember literally forever. You know, and so I think not that that doesn't happen in amateur wrestling, but it's just, like I said, vastly different, you know, just the kind of what it takes, I think, focus wise in order to be good are quite different. And that was a big adjustment to make early on. A posture was also a thing, right? Like amateur wrestling is very closed. All the movements are really precise and direct, and professional wrestling is a theater. So everything needs to be large and grand and able to be seen from the top, you know, row of the upper balcony. Like, you know, so I think those were kind of some of the things that were major adjustments. I remember early on the kind of jargon, if you will, the lexicon of professional wrestling was a barrier for me just because I didn't have a lot of, you know, insider experience, you could say, sort of all my perspective of pro wrestling was just kind of as a fan, as a kid growing up. And once I got into high school, I was just kind of focused on sports. So I didn't really, you know too much about what goes on behind the curtain, you could say, you know. So when I got to the Performance Center, that was also a big learning curve for me. Initially, it was just like, all these people are saying words and I don't know what those words mean in the context they're talking about. And like, hey, you guys explain what the heat is? Cause I don't know what that is. You know, and that's funny, right? Like, that really happened.
Right. I mean, all right. So I did wrestling training for about a year plus. And yeah, there were students in there that they would say, all right, now run down the basics of the match for me. And it's like, they can never put it together, you know, heat, comeback, falsies, finish. They just, for whatever reason, like it was like 2 plus 2 and always equaled 5 to them, right? It just never really fit until like their like last day there, they finally got it and then they never showed up again. But you know, it is like, for those people who have never been in a wrestling ring before, it is amazing. And that was the thing that I found the most difficult. There's so many things that you have to focus on at one time while you're in the ring. And one of the things that a lot of the students had a problem with is much like what you were talking about, the amateur wrestlers in particular, when they're down low and you're focused on the match, you got to open up, you got to put the headlock in, but you also got to work to the crowd. You got to find the camera and you got to keep yourself. It is so much that people, you don't remember. You just don't remember in the moment. That was the biggest thing that I had, is like, I always missed something. I always screwed something up and forgot about doing something in particular.
I mean, it takes a long time to undo that, like, right? If you're, you know, muscle memory, if you will, yeah, or just whatever, yeah, it takes a long time to kind of erase that or unlearn some pieces of it, of like, hey, you don't need to defend yourself here because this guy's not going to try to take you down.
Yeah. Yep. Or the flinching. The flinching is the biggest thing too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like you said, I mean, it's just a lot, right? And yeah, and I mean, I think also people that have never, like, I think people take for granted just how much it hurts to take a bump and hit the ropes and to take a hard buckle and all the things, like, because people, you know, your body does get used to doing it, certainly, and can callous up, and is obviously an amazing thing that reacts and adapts to whatever we give to it. But you can't take for granted that, like, hey, anytime you take a bump, it sucks. Like,
yeah.
It hurts.
Yeah, there's a reason why there's a thing called a bump card. And
it's like a little mini car crash.
I remember talking to Al Snow one time, and that's exactly what he said. It's a mini car crash every single time. And I remember the first bump that I did, I learned a very important lesson that day. Always tuck your chin, because I rattled my head off the back of the mat so hard I was seeing stars, literally. So there's just, there's so much that really goes into it. And if you look, I'll say, if you don't believe me, just go do it. Just find a school, go do it, and give it a shot one day, and you truly will. And you talked about, I want to go back a little bit, because you talked about growing up a fan of wrestling, and you loved wrestling growing up, and a lot of your podcasts are going to focus on the mental health of everything. How did your journey coming up to and going through WWE kind of alter, if at all, your love of the business and how things kind of ended with the company? Did that alter your mental health a little bit? What was that whole journey of the ups and downs and everything like for you?
Yeah, hard, man. Very hard. So I think one of the big things that I've talked about a few times recently is my identity, I guess you could say. And I think this is true for a lot of athletes and wrestlers, pro wrestlers, and just kind of like anybody who sort of it, like what they do is a really large part of their identity, as opposed to just kind of being like a job that they do. Right. So, for basically my entire life, I think my main identity was wrestler, whether that was amateur wrestler or pro wrestler. That was kind of my main identity, where I derived a lot of my self-esteem. And, that can be obviously a difficult journey, right? Because maybe you're not in direct control of everything and you try your best to control what you can control, but there's outside factors and just, it definitely kind of drug me down. I wasn't doing good, obviously, at the end. And that's not the way that you dream of things going down. Obviously just disappointing to kind of, Otis and I, Nico and I have an actual friendship, a very close friendship. I would even go as far as to call it brotherhood. We have genuine love for one another. And I think that obviously came across on the screen as you watched us perform together. It's kind of like losing a piece of family, right? Somebody that you see every single week. And now all of a sudden, like, you're at home and you don't see them anymore, and they're still out doing their thing. Like, it doesn't not hurt. But at the same time, I think, pro wrestling was way more of a childhood dream of his than it was of mine, and it was always kind of something that I would have liked to do, but not like, oh, I have to do that and I won't be able to live without doing it. Like I said, kind of coming out the other side, obviously, and getting to spend the time with my family now, I'm actually, I found gratefulness in the way that things went down. And sort of, I just believe that, like, life is what it is, and you kind of have to, figure out your perspective and deal with it accordingly. Right. But kind of back to the identity piece, I realized that I personally needed to shift my identity off of wrestling onto, something else that I could derive my self-esteem from that was much more concrete and was something that I was in direct control of. And the two things for me was being a father and being a husband, and I think a lot of people can relate to that, obviously, but it can be very difficult work because the skills and things that are required to be good at those are typically vastly different than what it is to be kind of good in a business sense or in a sports environment or just something that's a kind of uber a competitive environment, right? Because it requires much more collaboration and much more kind of teamwork and just being able to, like, really sit down and actually listen to somebody else's perspective and not try to just always get your shit in, if for lack of a better term, right? So, which is kind of what you have to do if you want to be a good athlete or a good professional wrestler. Like, you got to be kind of on the grind thinking about yourself all the time because everybody else is, and it's, somebody's always trying to come and take what you got. So, for me, that was a massive kind of mental shift that I started to make towards the end of WWE before I actually got let go, just because, I think I didn't do much for about 6 months there at the end of my time. So I was at home a little bit more often than, hey, I had been at home before that. So that's been really big in my life to kind of have done that work, and yoga and meditation have helped me do those things out a lot and kind of just figure out, who I am and what I really want out of life, outside of sports, which encompass such a, big swath of my life, up to that point.
You mentioned your time in WWE. It didn't end well. It's been close to a year since you've been let go at this point. Has all the time that you've been away and time you've been able to spend with your family and the changes you've made in your life, has that allowed you to your perspective on your time with WWE? Has that changed at all? Do you look on your time there any differently than you did, say, 7-8 months ago?
Yeah, I mean, I probably am able to just kind of like let go of some of the things that are what they are, right? Or just sort of the slights or kind of things that don't really matter and aren't going to do anything for me in my life and just are part of that particular environment and sort of tease out and suss out the lessons that are going to be helpful and useful for me going forward and kind of just dump the rest of it and let it kind of be, right? Because it's not going to change and there's no use being bitter or angry about something that literally is kind of just it's the past, right? I mean,
yeah,
the past is history. So you know, yeah, that's definitely kind of been good for me. I think, you know, like I could have done better, right? I mean, I look back and there's kind of mistakes I think that I made. I wish character wise I would have leaned into amateur wrestling kind of more hard and made that a bigger part of my character early on in our main roster run, because I didn't really have a hook early on, you know, as much as kind of I needed to. And so looking at the landscape of tag team landscape going in, you know, we had these discussions quite often about, okay, like, you know, tag teams get split up quite often. How are we going to try to avoid that? Right. What are we going to try to do? And, you know, ultimately, like, it's so week to week there that you kind of, when something starts to work, you have to just like lean into it and use it. Right. And so obviously the Worm and kind of Otis's comeback was working well for us. And, you know, I'm thinking like, hey, we can get 6-8 months out of this, no problem. And then we'll shift and we'll do something else. Cause that's just kind of like the way that things are here. And I think we were kind of working into that. You know, we had a good Elimination Chamber match. And right before that, we went almost an hour on TV. And this is like a week or two before the pandemic really started. Right. So yeah. I think we were picking up some momentum as a team, you know, and then obviously the pandemic happens and a lot of shifts have to be made. And just, we just weren't able to kind of, I guess, successfully navigate that as a team as well as maybe we could have or whatever. I mean, it is what it is. It doesn't matter why it happened. Right. But it happened and sort of, I mean, it's crazy to me that they would just allow the Mandy storyline to like end without any kind of, I understand they probably didn't want either of them to be a heel, but it's like, yeah, probably one of, if not the most invested in stories, you know, in the entire company. And yes, it's been going on since before Valentine's Day and run through WrestleMania. So you're talking about like 3 months worth of time have been spent.
It carried the whole summer.
Like to have them go their separate ways without like, with just pretending like it never happened. He's not depressed. You know, we pitched something where it was like, hey, let's lose some matches because this guy's sad that his girlfriend left him. And then like, well, there's some conflict between us, but then we're able to like get back to work. And now we're like, we get, you know, going again. Right. Or just something like, we can't pretend like it never happened. It happened. We were all there. We all saw, yeah, we were all invested in it. Like it happened. It happened. So, you know, and then on top of that, obviously what happened between us and kind of not having really any story between us out of that, which, I mean, that's their decision. They make those decisions. That's fine. But if what you want to do is ultimately run with them, you know, they didn't do a very good job of like making him a babyface that people should care about, because like his girlfriend left him, didn't do anything. His best friend hits him over the head with a briefcase. Doesn't really do anything about it. Like, I don't know. That's kind of chopping off a character's legs a little bit, in my opinion. So, you know, like I said, I love that guy and I wanted the best for him. And so that was, and he's doing great now. And I'm not surprised to, you know, see him. And I also love Gable, obviously an amateur wrestler as well. And, you know, the three of us used to ride together and are good friends and still, you know, keep in touch with each other and have a group message. And I'm very happy for those guys that they've been able to continue to navigate those waters and succeed, because I know how difficult it is, you know, ultimately to do that. So I think it speaks to, you know, the level of quality performer that both of those guys are, that they've been able to, you know, attain that level. And for me, you know, I think things have worked out for the best in my life, because, you know, I think I wasn't particularly ready for how emotionally difficult it was going to be to spend my life every week on the road with a brand new baby girl either, you know, and that was something that I maybe didn't deal with as well as I could have dealt with early on, you know, and sort of just try to like tuck underneath the rug and sort of just pretend like it wasn't there, even though I knew that it was there. And, you know, so I think that might have led to sort of just my overall kind of being not being as positive as it could have been either. So, you know, I think it's a multitude of factors, and it's just a very competitive, very, very crazy environment, you know? So I think my situation is not like a unique situation, right? 100 people got let go last year. So that's just part of the business, part of that company in particular.
Very true. I got to commend you, because you're talking about, you know, the beginning of your main roster run, and you guys just instantly had that chemistry with each other that really got the fans behind you. But you came at a time which was very strange as far as the WWE's relationship with the fans. I don't know if a lot of people remember, but you were a part of the fans being in control and having the control with the call-ups with you, Lacey Evans, EC3. And how was that whole situation, and how was it kind of like presented to you, your call up in that whole thing where they kind of hyped you up for a whole month, and then you kind of, your introduction is in this segment with Alexa Bliss and Paul Heyman, where it's kind of like you're kind of talking for Otis and he's just like kind of drooling over Alexa Bliss. It was very strange, like kind of that whole month that they kind of introduced you guys to the main roster. How was that experience for you?
You know, yeah, it was, I think strange is a pretty good word for it. You know, that whole month of January, we were pulling double duty too. So we were working at NXT house shows on at least on Saturday, sometimes on Friday, Saturday, then flying out Sunday, then going Raw and SmackDown. Even though we weren't doing anything, we were still going to TVs, you know, so we were pretty busy that month. And honestly, the first kind of 5 months or so of our time, you know, I think the six of us didn't have a brand, right? So we were working both brands because it was Monday and Tuesday still. So, you know, that was kind of obviously we were around a lot, and we were particularly busy. At least it felt like we were super busy. We were working some house shows then too. So some of our road trips were Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday there in those first maybe 3-4 months. You know, I think, yeah, you don't have any control over how your kind of beginning goes, right? You can try to do what it is, but ultimately, like, they tell you what to do and you got to do it. That's the job. That's what you get paid to do. That's what it is. So, I think obviously we would have liked for it to maybe have been a little bit different than that. But I think our kind of attitude was always like, you know, let's take what they give us. If we have a small suggestion to make, let's make it. But otherwise, let's just try to do the best we can early on with what we're given, show that we can, you know, do that, and then hopefully kind of build some equity up doing that in time. And I think we were able to kind of do that a little bit, you know, and we weren't able to maybe get as many things as we wanted to. You know, the second summer of us there, if it wasn't a COVID summer, like we had pitched a barbecue thing that we were going to be like doing barbecue every week at TVs and to bring a barbecue and like just let people come and interact with us around the barbecue. And we'll just be like the APA sitting around their table backstage playing cards, right? Oh, like anytime you see us backstage, nice. We're like around a barbecue. That's just where we are. Like when we come and wrestle, cool, we're in our gear. But otherwise, if you see us backstage, we got a barbecue with us. And so I think we're probably going to make that happen. And I think that could have been pretty awesome. You know, and yeah, it was, I think we had some great ideas and we talked about how we could maybe tweak our act a little bit going up. You're like, okay, this is who we were in NXT, but what kind of little adjustments can we make going up and sort of like, if we pretend like none of these people have ever seen us before, like what's our hook going to be, right? And Blue Collar Solid was that thing, the kind of our motto that we didn't really use that in NXT. We saved it for 5 or 6 months. And then when we moved up, we were like, hey, we're just going to put this on our stuff and we're just going to use this. Cause like, I think you get that, right? Like you see us come out dressed the way we are. We're Blue Collar Solid. It's like, all right, I get what these guys are. Like you know, and so I think that was helpful for us too, just to be able to sort of stamp where our brand was early on, even if it wasn't in the greatest matches or the greatest segments. It was like, when you saw us, you at least understood what we were about, you know, and you could make your initial judgment based on that.
I love the barbecue idea. One of my favorite backstage segments with you guys was when you guys were putting all that junk into the blender. And then Becky just shows up and takes a drink and goes, it's a little weak, and hands it back to Otis. That there's a lot of cool things I thought you guys could have done there. But kind of, as you guys, you say you pitched a ton of ideas coming up as a tag team in WWE. I can't imagine how hard that is, because there's a stigma surrounding how WWE treats their tag teams. A lot of them get split up, you know, guys go on singles runs, other people get, you know, kind of lost and forgot. You look at like the main three tag teams over on Raw, even Otis and Gable, those were all single superstars who were thrown together and into mixed tag teams. So coming up as a traditional tag team, did that put any extra added pressure on you? Did you guys know you were kind of had an uphill climb there while you're coming up? You know, what's that mindset like?
I mean, yes, obviously, like, you know, we're paying attention to the environment and know sort of like what the potential pitfalls are, right? And you kind of try to deal with those the way that you can, you know. But I mean, not to kind of go back to, I mean, the pandemic was what it was, you know, but I think there's, for our act, like, we were so interactive, fan interactive centric. Like, that was such a big part of our act, whereas like maybe other people who have more like hard hitting kind of shooter style that don't interact with the audience as often in their matches, or maybe more tailored to having a television match with no audience. It's just like, you know, like, not to make any excuses, but I think we knew our position was like, we could really fill the like opening over with the kids type live event role. Like, yes, we could do that role for a long time, as like, okay, the New Day's filled that role for quite a while, but they're going into more serious things as we came up, right? Kofi's doing the WrestleMania stuff. Like, so, you know, we thought, hey, we could, and that was our job on live events, and we were doing well with it. And I think it probably would have continued. And then it just kind of, the environment shifted and the Mandy thing happened. And I think after that, they just kind of saw like, all right, well, Otis doesn't really, you know, he's gotten over in this thing with Mandy. He doesn't really need a partner anymore. Like, let's try to run with him, you know? And I think ultimately, I think they wanted to break us up around Money in the Bank. I don't have any proof of that. Obviously, it's just my perspective. You know, I think I was home for like 6 or 7 weeks there. I wasn't going to TVs in the middle, you know, after WrestleMania and during the kind of Money in the Bank stuff. I wasn't even around. So, and then maybe, I don't know what the environment was, but obviously we came back and what happened with the briefcase was what happened with it, which is kind of a decision I think you make off the back of some other decision or plan, right? It's like, I can't imagine that was the initial plan, was to have, I mean, they just don't do that very often with people, where they give them the briefcase and then take it away from them. And obviously that's not good for someone. So, it was, I can't imagine that was their initial plan. I have no idea what it was, but it's all speculative. You know, so I think kind of that's, at least as I've analyzed it, you know, I think that was a big piece of it, was just not just it happening, but our ability to, or inability to kind of react to that situation as a team well enough to keep the team together, you know, and ultimately it broke us up.
You know, you look at Otis winning that briefcase. I think a lot of people looked at that moment as, you know, he was getting over. He had the whole storyline with Mandy. It was like, okay, WWE obviously sees something in him. And then, look, the storyline progressed the way that it happened. And then all of a sudden, you guys are broken up. You're released from the company. He starts going with Gable, and they stripped away everything that got him over. And now all of a sudden, he's building that momentum up again with Chad Gable. They have a really cool thing that they're doing right now with the Alpha Academy, even though they just took the tag titles off of them and they may not have a WrestleMania spot at this point. But, you know, you said you've liked what Otis is doing. What do you think realistically his ceiling is in WWE?
I mean, I don't see any reason why he couldn't be a world champion, right? With the right. I think there's some pieces he needs around him, right? I think I think his ability to get to where he has back now from where he was shows that, you know, he's a very quality performer, and like, you watch what he does in the ring and I think it's very believable. There is just like an underlying kind of silliness to him, right? He just has this natural kind of charisma that I don't think he could ever get rid of, where it's like, man, it's just really hard to dislike the guy, dude. He's just such a likable guy. You just watch him just bebopping around and just like being himself. And it's like, not that he's not capable of convincing you that he's a killer or being scary. He certainly is. But to convince you that he's like a dislikable human being, pretty difficult to do. I mean, and he's like, helps to have Gable, because Gable's very good at being kind of a sarcastic prick, you know? And he plays that role well. Like, I mean, he's not that human being in any capacity, but he's good at it. He's very sharp tongued. And, you know, I think his ceiling as a heel is not up top, but I think his ceiling as a babyface is like, I don't think there's any reason why he couldn't get over like Dusty Rhodes and be as believable as like that kind of a character. If, you know, the environment was right, you know, but you know, I think the chances of that happening maybe are not super high, you know, but I mean, obviously I'm biased because I love the guy, but I don't see any reason why, you know, with the proper booking and sort of the proper environment around him over a, you know, 6 to 8 month period, why he couldn't potentially be believable enough in that spot. Right. I mean, he might need a mouthpiece.
Yeah. I mean, they've given him some big wins. You know, he did pin Randy Orton clean as a sheet a few weeks back. And I get what you're saying about the silliness too. Cause like, even when he's being serious, there was a really cool moment that was caught on camera right before they faded to Raw, where Orton gave Gable an RKO out of nowhere. And Otis just looks at Orton and goes, yeah, try to RKO this neck, bitch. And it got caught on camera. And I like, he was trying to be like really tough and serious and threatening. I just laughed my ass off because it's just Otis, man. You can't help but just smile when he does stuff like that.
Well, and I mean, and I think as a heel, it's probably like, that's not the reaction you want. Right. But as a babyface, like he could do that same thing and you love it. Right. Cause it's right. Like, he's a fighting guy. He's like, yeah, but look at my neck. Look how big it is. Try, you know, like good luck, bitch. Like, yeah. That like, who couldn't relate to that? Right. It's yeah. And it's just, that's a likable quality. Right. Like you said. And so I think he has so many of those. That's like, he's a quality enough performer that he can attempt to cover those things up and work really hard to try to be as mean as possible. But like, there's going to be times where he does things where it's just going to be funny and it's going to be entertaining because he is funny and he is entertaining as a person.
So like, you have so much experience in WWE and you kind of talk about like being that in that environment and being around so many great people. Like, outside of Otis, who do you think that WWE really hasn't scratched the surface on as far as like what they can do on camera for the fans to see?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, I love that Chad's getting a chance to really like show what he can do, you know, because I mean, I think he's very underrated. He's been very good for very long. Like, you'd be hard pressed to go back and find a segment that's been bad of his. I mean, yeah, Shorty G wasn't his idea. He gave it, you know, that came from the very tippy top. And when stuff comes from the very tippy top, you do your best with it. You take it, you say, yes, sir. And you do your very best with it because you know what the implications of doing otherwise are. Not good for you. In a short, you know, I think Matt Riddle's obviously shown, you know, not that he's underrated in any capacity, but he's kind of shown what someone's able to do if they come up and are able to sort of catch lightning in a bottle and have a very clear, you know, I think when you come up, you need a very clear gimmick, right? You need like, you can't be like, oh, I'm really good at wrestling. Cause it's like, well, are you better than, I mean, Daniel Bryan's not there anymore, but like, are you going to be better at wrestling than Seth Rollins? Are you going to be better or whoever the best, like, that's not a good enough hook, right? Like, you're Matt Riddle. Hey, I see what this guy's hook is. Like, I either like him or I don't like him right away, but I get him. And I think that's a really big, you know, piece. Disappointing to see Cesaro leave without kind of ever having, I think they really, really dropped the ball with that guy. Very, very, but I, you know,
multiple times.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the longevity that he's been able to send another guy, right? Like, go back, try to find a segment where he's like been really bad. Probably be hard pressed to find that. You know, I think, I'm a big Nikki Cross fan, you know, I think obviously what she's doing now is what she's doing and it shows kind of her ability and range, especially if you know kind of who she was in Sanity. And obviously she wasn't that girl on the main roster as much, or it was more of a cartoon version of that, but, it was, you know, more scary, in NXT. And obviously now she's kind of played a superhero character and has been doing well with it, in my opinion. And is someone that I could see, like, if given the opportunity, really, really running with the ball and doing very well. You know, I think obviously her size probably hurts her a little bit, especially compared to, you know, Charlotte and, you know, even Becky are head taller than her, right? So she has to kind of maybe alter her wrestling style a little bit when she wrestles some of them, and that may take a little bit out away from her. But yeah,
she killed it with Charlotte though, leading up to SummerSlam. She had some of her
best. She's amazing. I mean, she could kill it with anyone. You know what I mean? Not that she can't wrestle with them, but just that she can't have a 50-50 match with them. Maybe the way that both people have been booked up to this point, and kind of if you level up the characters, not necessarily their underlying wrestling abilities, but just the way that they've been presented on television.
In your podcast, you're going to talk mostly about amateur wrestling, but you said you talk a little bit about professional wrestling as well. Having been in it for so long and things ending the way that it did, you know, do you have a hard time kind of watching the product these days? Is it something that you enjoy doing, or do you just kind of like root for your friends and colleagues and that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about the product as in WWE, yeah, I'm not a big watcher of it, you know. I mean, if I'm being completely honest, I wasn't watching it while I was wrestling either. I mean, I was in backstage and watching what I was watching there, but it was like, I'm wrestling on SmackDown. I'm not like catching Raw on Monday. You know, I'm hanging out with my kids, like following it on social media. That's kind of where I follow WWE and AEW. When I watch wrestling, which is most days, I like to watch old wrestling, you know, 80s. I like territory wrestling. I like to watch Japanese wrestling. If I'm going to watch WWE too, it'll be like Attitude Era as a nostalgic thing, just from my youth, kind of just like juiced up. I'll watch one Attitude Era match and then, you know, a couple more technical matches or, you know, whatever. You know, I think the kind of disappointment around the Mandy thing, and just sort of seeing like, not that being our only situation for us, but like other people's kind of, just the short-term nature of that particular company being in it, right? And how little the conversation was about like the overarching thing, even in like a month. You know, it's like things are changing by the hour, literally almost every week at television. So it's so hard to kind of like keep this congruent story, you know? And I think obviously as fans, you guys probably see that and know that, right? And that's kind of been a big disappointment. You know, and it's not that it's not discussed about or tried by people internally to, you know, fix it, or make it less so. It's just that the environment, it kind of is what it is, and you have your constraints, and you're, you know, you can work inside of the box that you're allowed to work in, there, you know? And so I think also one kind of point I would make is that, you know, wrestlers as a generality, if what you care about in wrestling is kind of your art and who you are and being able to present who you are in a way that you want to present it, and that's like the most important thing for you, you know, these WWE is going to be a difficult place because they really want to control, you know, everything for obvious reasons. I mean, they're a large corporation. They have corporate partnerships. Like, they got to control what's being put out. But it's important to note that, you know, that is what it is. And that, like, you can try to kind of get your ideas in where you can get your ideas in, but ultimately at the end of the day, you don't have the last say, and your job is to say yes, sir, and do what you're asked to do and do it at a high level.
And some people can excel at that. Others have unfortunately not been able to, and you know, it sucks. It's nice that there's some other alternatives out there, you know, for those fans. And I think, you know, that's where AEW really has excelled, is kind of like letting people come in and be who they are, and kind of letting them, you know, either sink or swim being who they are. Because, you know, that's one of the things that I think irritates a lot of fans with WWE is like, okay, you've been incredibly successful at doing this, right? Like, perfect example, you know, Pete Dunne, incredibly successful in NXT, and now they bring him up and they put a little hat on him and they call him Butch and they put him next to Sheamus. Like, what on God's green earth are you doing?
I mean, it is unfortunate too that, like, I mean, some people loved and some people hated sort of the disconnect between NXT and Raw and SmackDown, right? Like, there's some people who are saying, like, I can't stand the disconnect. And I get that in particular when people who you really liked come up and then they're presented in a different way that's not nearly as cool as they were presented when they were, you know, in developmental, if you will, or in NXT.
Long been my argument.
Right. And I mean, and so now there's no disconnect between the two of them. And ultimately, I think that's going to people are not going to be happy with that, you know, that because the connection is not probably from the person that they would like for it to be from, perhaps. I'm not sure, but, you know, that's what I get the feeling of anyways. So, you know, it's like so many people were able to come in from sort of the indies and be their authentic self in NXT and face kind of new up and coming talent from different worlds. And that's what helped NXT kind of catch fire and become ultimately what it was, you know, while I was there. And I think that's why it was so cool. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it is disappointing to see, and it kind of doesn't make sense, right? When you think about it, you're like, well, we had this running joke in the locker room of like, if you try to make sense, someone will come along and like give you a little knock on the head. Like, don't be trying to make sense, dude. You're going to drive yourself crazy around here. You already know things don't make sense. right. And they don't.
I say that all the time. Wear your Vince hat. Everything will make sense more.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's 100% true. Right. And it's that short-term thing. That's just kind of like, I mean, you know, the leader of the company leads the company, right? And yeah, and everyone else kind of has to follow that. And so I don't think it's like some big surprise, right? You know, it is, if you kind of, I think, internally call out what the issue is, obviously there's a direct implication and perhaps jeopardize your employment status. So best probably not to do that and try to find some other reason for the issue. And, you know, I think that's kind of, you just see that in the environment a lot, because human beings are gonna find routines and rituals to exist inside of their habitat and survive, right? That's what we do. That's yep. What we're really, really good at. And, you know, that's what it is.
All right. Well, Levi, man, you've been very generous with your time on this Monday evening. Again, this is going to drop on Friday. We do appreciate your time. Again, tell people where they can find your stuff. If they want to come out and see you perform. And, of course, you know, when they can expect the podcast to drop and how they can find that.
Yeah, so you'll see me on the Believe Network here, hopefully starting in April with Wrestling is Life. Obviously, be promoting it on my social media accounts, mainly Twitter and Instagram. Right there, Real Levi Cooper is my handle on both Twitter and Instagram. So, you know, you can find me there for latest information. Wrestling-wise, yeah, going to continue to stay on the West Coast here for at least another 6 to 8 months while, you know, this school year finishes out, and just kind of while my situation is what it is with my kids. And then maybe look to kind of expand my horizons and move out into other territories after that, potentially after this year. But yeah, I'll be mostly Defy, Prestige, and potentially in Southern California, hopefully. No guarantees yet, but fingers crossed. And, you know, yeah, you guys can be promoting all those on my socials as well. So be on the lookout for it. And as always, love all of my fans and appreciate any support that I get. It means a lot to me. And it's the reason why I came back to wrestling. So thank you guys.
All right. Well, we appreciate you joining us here. Ricky Chino, SP3. This has been a special presentation of the Believe in Pro Wrestling podcast. Make sure to like, share, subscribe. Working our way towards monetization on the YouTube channel, so every subscription really helps. Make sure to check out my conversation with Wardlow, which dropped earlier this week. You can find that right here on the Believe in Pro Wrestling Podcast YouTube channel as well. Thank you guys so much. Enjoy your weekend, SP3, and I'll be back Monday morning, available at 7 a.m. wherever podcasts are available, and of course right here on the Believe in Pro Wrestling Podcast YouTube channel, brought to you by Bet Online.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning architectural shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save big money.